This is WGN Radio. Just a quick note as we go to Terry Savage on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and this is about money, too. RFK Jr. stumbled over his facts when one of the senators pushed him to describe his ideas about Medicaid reform. Kennedy describes the program as being fully federally funded. Spending on Medicaid is actually split between the states and the federal government. The states pay half. Kennedy also described the premiums and deductibles as being too high when, except in very rare cases, Medicaid enrollees do not pay either of those types of fees. Kennedy does not seem to have a mastery of Medicaid and Medicare, as he's being questioned by the senator from Louisiana, who is a Republican. These issues are not his strong suit. In fact, about that, just one other note here. This is from Associated Press. Kennedy inaccurately claimed that Medicaid is fully paid for by the federal government. It's not. States and federal taxpayers fund it. He also said most Americans have purchased a Medicare Advantage plan when only about 1 in 10 Americans have. He also got wrong which plans are more expensive. His misstatements about the program were peppered in between suggestions he would try to privatize the programs, repeatedly saying most Americans like private insurance and that they dislike the government-run versions of the programs. Plenty of people with Obamacare would disagree with that. And the person pressing him is a Republican senator who himself is a physician. Okay, now, Terry Savage on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hello, Terry.
Who, did you discuss that in the last half hour, what's going on in that hearing?
No.
Okay, I'm glad I'm wearing headphones because the smoke would be coming out of my ears.
Well, I knew that Medicare Advantage plans are a button for you.
Well, forget that. No. Let's start with Medicaid. Let's start with this whole... We're going to talk stocks today, but first of all, there's a law passed in 1974 that says that the president cannot not pay out money that Congress appropriates. It was challenged in 1975. This was after the Nixon era.
Yep.
And the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that a president cannot withhold funding that Congress has designated. And yesterday's hassle was insane. And the demonstration in this hearing this morning of the lack of knowledge and understanding about the very basics of how we're not talking about Medicare, we're talking about Medicaid here.
Yeah.
Which is, yes, jointly funded. States set the rules for the assets and so on and so forth. Nobody pays a deductible. And to freeze the payments, not just for Medicaid bills at hospitals, but for all the many organizations that operate to help people. To freeze payments, don't get me in trouble here, John. This is insanity.
The smoke is coming through the radio.
Let's talk about the stock market.
Well, because Dr. Bob Frelick has come on and gave us a robust expectation of what's going to happen this year. He thinks the Dow will close or at some point this year hit 50,000. What are we going to do today?
Okay, so my conscience has sort of bothered me. Because I love Dr. Bob, and gosh, Dr. Bob has been so very right, as all of you who have followed have known. Last year, predicting 44,000, and at the time, my jaw dropped when he went to the Executives Club Economic Forecast this year and said Dow 50,000. I was totally speechless. I'm sure the camera caught that, and they'll play that in the video next year. And he makes a very, very good case, Dr. Bob. But it occurred to me that unless I knew someone could give me a guarantee that he'd be 100% right, we need to temper that kind of a view with some intelligent analysis that takes the other side of the coin. That's it about the stock market. For every 100 shares that trades of any stock, someone's a seller and someone's a buyer. Someone thinks, that's enough, that stock's gone high enough, and somebody's a buyer and says, I'm buying this now because it's going higher. That's where the money agrees to disagree, right at the stock market, and the price of that agreement is the price of the stock. So for many years, and I think we talked to James Stack last spring, I have been a great avid follower of a guy named James Stack, and you can find him at investtech.com, investtech.com. Now he started right, I've said this over many years, if there was one investment newsletter I could read and not any other. I would read his monthly newsletter. He has daily and weekly commentaries at Investec. He started that newsletter in 1982. He has a very large money management firm for wealthy individuals. I have been around for some of his major calls, and they have not all been bearish. So he did warn before Black Monday, October 19th. But in 1991, before that whole decade of huge stock market performance that ended a little in 2001, he published an issue called Toro, 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 which is infamous on the street, Toro meaning bull. He told everybody to get in. And then I was there at the money show in Florida in March of 2009. Remember 2009 when everybody's homes were getting foreclosed, the economy was in the tank, and I was there when he said, and I wrote about it, that we are heading toward the buying opportunity of a lifetime. He made that speech, and I was there just 4 days after the bear market bottom. So I don't want you to think that Jim Stack is only a conservative guy
right.
who tends to be bearish.
Yeah.
But for the last a year at least, he has had his subscribers very conservatively invested because he has long-term, he's got a 40-year track record, long-term proprietary indexes, which have been screaming, be careful, be careful, be careful. So I would like you to bring on Jim Stack, and maybe everybody could just listen, as we did with Dr. Bob, with a grain of salt and delight, with a grain of appreciation for what could go wrong. And let me just say this. Nothing seems to turn the market down. I mean, tariffs. Oh, my God, we're going to have tariffs. It's going to be inflationary. Nope. Interest rates are climbing despite Fed action. Mortgage rates are up. That's going to hit the housing industry. Turns the market down? Nope. Nothing. China's beating us in AI. The tech stocks that were all the rage.
I was surprised that they didn't go down this week.
They went down and then they bounced back.
More than they did.
Okay. So nothing seems to be able to pop the bubble, if it is one, of this bull market. And that's why I want you to listen closely to Jim Stack. I'll let you bring him on.
Terry Savage, the money lady, terrysavage.com is on a line. And so too is our guest, Jim Stack. Jim, welcome to the show.
Great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Terry said very nice things about you. Did you hear all of that stuff?
Yeah, I sure did. I remember some of those. I do remember in the bottom in March 2009, and I remember the money show in January, and the gloom was so thick you could cut it with a knife. And we were very defensively positioned. The market hadn't hit bottom. We were well under 50% invested. We were mostly in cash, almost two-thirds in cash. And by June, May, June, we were up to 94% invested.
What year?
That is how.
What year?
That was 2009. That was at the start of this.
Yeah,
you know, more than decade-long bull market.
Well,
and you couldn't drag people into the market. They were so scared, they had lost more than they thought they could lose, and that's the psychology of a market bottom, which is exactly opposite of what we have of the investor psychology today, of course.
So, why are you bearish then in 2025?
Well, we are ultra cautious. I hate to say we're bearish. We're actually tracking four key models to tell us when the top is in place. We do feel that we have an extreme valuation, let's call it an extreme valuation problem rather than a bubble. Bubbles are only identified with 2020 hindsight in you know, looking back in history. But we are at the highest valuation level of the market cap to GDP in history. That's Warren Buffett's favorite indicator. You know, Warren Buffett with Berkshire Hathaway. Berkshire Hathaway today, people don't realize it has $325 billion in cash reserves. That is two times what it was 18 months ago. It's about six times what it was 8 years ago. In other words, they're running close to a 30% cash reserve. And Warren Buffett is not a market timer, but he is a risk manager. And that's what we're trying to do in today's market, because we think it is an extreme risk market. And we're seeing symptoms that of the psychology that, boy, when this thing reverses, it could get very exciting and not in a good way.
so we're overvalued. What do you think is going to happen this year?
Well, it's not just the overvaluation. It's also the level of confidence. When all investors are lined up on one side of the fence, like they were at the 2009 bottom, everyone was gloomy. And economists were forecasting up to another 12, 18 months of recession. It was very difficult to climb on the opposite side of the fence, as I said, and step up to over a 90% invested position. But all the blocks dropped into place that we were looking at. And today, if you look at a survey that was done, it came out just toward the end of last year, and it's from the Conference Board, it is of the percentage of consumers who expect stock prices to be higher 12 months from now, and it is at the highest level in its history. It's higher than it was at the market peak in 2007. It was higher than it was at the tech bubble peak in March of 2000. Now, that doesn't mean that the markets automatically go down, but it does mean that investors are really entrenched in this market. Yeah. They're enthusiastic. They're convinced. They're convinced it can only go higher. And you're seeing some of this in the speculative indices.
But what's
not
the,
just the NVIDIA, but also everything associated with AI is you know, it's sailing like it. There is no limit.
What's the fundamental that bothers you, or what are the fundamentals? Because you know, I could give you a laundry list of things on paper that look pretty good. Having heard everything you just said, are there some fundamentals that are particularly troubling to you?
The fundamentals, you know, when you go back and you look at economic recessions, and you might look at market tops, I'm going to be honest, the fundamentals never look that very bad at the top. In fact, going into the financial crisis in 2007-8, let's take that as an example, the housing was just, you know, housing prices were coming down, but that was considered a good thing because houses were becoming more affordable. They'd been falling since late 2005. As we went through 2007, the market peaked in October. The economy entered recession that same quarter. And yet we went into 2008 with all of the Fed surveys and virtually all of the FOMC ranges projecting positive GDP growth throughout 2008. And in other words, you don't see the danger on what everyone's watching in the terms of current economy,
okay,
and particularly the lagging economy like employment statistics and stuff. But fundamentally, we do have a couple problems.
Okay, let me stop you right there then, Jim. I'm glad you got to that because I want you to be more specific. And if fundamentals isn't the right question, the fundamentals, if you will, I'm talking about are interest rates are manageable, inflation is manageable, employment is extraordinary, people still are spending money. I could point to a number of things like that that would make one feel good about the coming year. So let's get more specific about the other side of the coin. Right now, though, we're visiting with Terry Savage, the money lady on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and Jim Stack, who is, as Terry said, at least asking us to be a little bit more cautious about our expectations this year. Right, Terry?
You know, it's interesting, John, you started, ended the last segment by saying, well, Jim, the things, you know, interest rates seem okay, and this seems okay. That's the thing. Everybody's looking at stuff that seems okay. I'm going to tell you that, Jim, you don't know this, but for my latest column just posted at terrysavage.com, I cribbed shamelessly from your latest investtech.com newsletter, and it is about something that nobody seems to be paying attention to, and I'll let you say why you devoted so much time to it, and that is the home building, home buying, home financing industry. That's a key one of your bellwether indicators, right?
Yeah, I was asking him before the break about all of these good things I could remind everybody of. So what are some specifics? Is that where we're going here, Jim?
Yeah, I think we need to dig into some of the numbers. And it feels good. I'll be honest, it feels good, but it also felt very good at the top of the tech bubble. In fact, you know, you saw a really positive new jobs on this month's employment report on the first Friday announcement, and that sounded really good. But if you go back to the late 90s, do you know when the biggest job creation was on the unemployment report. It came out the month after the tech bubble peaked in April of 2000. So you have to be careful about looking at lagging statistics that make you feel good. One thing about the employment report is that the unemployment rate did tick down a tenth, but it's actually 7/10 of a percentage point above its low. And there hasn't been a point in the last 40 years where it's gone up by this amount, by 0.7%, where we haven't gone into a recession within the next 12 to 18 months. So it's just, it doesn't have me crawling under a rock and putting my cash under the mattress, but it says, be careful out there. When you get into housing, you can't do that without getting into interest rates. Interest rates are on a good downtrend. The discount rate is at 4.5%. The Fed's planning on holding it now. We've gone from an expected number of rate cuts this year to where now they're saying, well, maybe one or maybe two. Here's the reason why. The CPI sounds pretty good. It's coming down. But if you look at the median CPI, this is where half the prices are higher and half are lower, or half the goods up and down. It's still at 3.85%, and the sticky price CPI, those items that are very tough to bring down, is at 3.7%. So both of these are still running almost twice what the Fed's target is. So that's why the Fed is going, maybe we better sit on our hands a little longer. Now, where that translates into the housing market is that we have not seen housing prices drop, at least drop by much. It's very locally where it's happening. But we are seeing inventory start to build up. In fact, the new home inventory, it's surprising because NAR, National Association of Realtors, all makes it sound like it's really good. Mm-hmm. New home inventory has been rising very dramatically, and it's at the highest level since the housing bubble burst. And the NAR's own unaffordability index is near the lowest level on record. In other words, you know, the people owning the homes who might think or might not think about putting them on the market feel great. The people who want to buy homes feel it's the worst time possibly in history to buy.
Yeah.
So it's very similar to what we saw in 2006, 2007. Of course, the Fed at that time started bringing down interest rates in 2007 before the stock market peaked. It's the first time in history that they started easing before a bear market actually started. And everyone thought the Fed had it under control. But, you know, what happened is as the housing inventory built up and housing prices started coming down, you know, all of a sudden consumers got very cautious. And consumer psychology can shift relatively quickly. And that's why I'm nervous about this year. You're seeing good headlines, but the headlines are kind of covering up the fact that sticky prices, and these are the Fed's own tracking on this, are running almost, they're running at 3.7, 3.8%. That's not much under 4.5% discount rate. It doesn't give the Fed a lot of room to maneuver right now.
When Bob Frelick was on, he gave us a number where he thought the markets would be, or at least where they would touch. Do you have a number in mind for us?
It's funny, Ben, because when I used to do a lot of the media appearances on Wall Street Week, and I was a panelist on Nightly Business Report for 25 years, and everyone asked, give us a forecast for the Dow at year end. And I said, well, give me a dartboard and a dart. I don't forecast stock prices. I try to stay on the right side of the market. And more importantly, I try to, if you make a mistake, and I learned this in my indoctrination in 73, 74. I came out of college, engineering degree, valedictorian, and I lost everything I put into the stock market. And it wasn't because I wasn't smart. It's because I was investing in what turned out to be the biggest bear market since the 1930s. And so what I've learned is from that and from successfully navigating the tech bubble and the housing bubble is err on the side of caution.
So what would you advise people to do now? Should they sell at the high? I know we're not going to advocate market timing here, but I mean, should people go to cash or go to bonds, or what should they do?
Well, as I said before, Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway, rather, has its highest level of cash in history. And if they're at 30% cash. Now, if you're investing and you are fully invested and you're in your 20s or your early 30s, and you're using dollar cost averaging, saving for retirement, keep doing that. And because you can ride through big bear markets. You can ride through a downturn like 2002 or 2007-09. But if you are in your 50s or 60s and you're saving for retirement, or if you're in retirement, please take some money off the table if you are over 70% invested. Get down to a level of comfort where if all of a sudden, if this thing starts turning, and I'm not forecasting that, I'm saying it's a high possibility, if not a probability, it will go down 15% literally within 2 months. That's how fast this kind of psychology that we're seeing in the AI, and not just AI stocks, but everything associated with technology or consumer discretionary. They'll come down fast. So sell to a level of comfort that you can sleep at night if this market suddenly starts dropping 10, 15% or more.
Jim, you're talking 10, 15% or more, but every year or every once in a while, you publish a graph of the average length, depth of the drop and duration of a bear market. Can you just give us a broad picture of that so people who've never invested in a bear market can understand what can happen and has happened?
And Jim, this will be our last question. We need to wrap this up, but what's the short answer to that?
Right. The short answer, bear market is defined as 20%. That's arbitrary. The big bear markets can be 50. They can take 50 to 55% of your portfolio. They're thought of as being generational bear markets, but they come around a lot more frequently, usually around every 10 to 15 years, and it's been more than 15 years since the last. So just remember, valuations are at record highs. The biggest bear markets, unfortunately, often come from the biggest levels of overvaluation.
That's Jim Stack. Jim, very interesting, very helpful. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Terry, thanks for setting that up. Okay, more from Terry Savage in a minute. Let's go into the WGN Radio Newsroom. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and there's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Home prices in Chicago rose 11.3% in December compared to a year earlier. According to Illinois Realtors data, the median price of a home in Chicago was $345,000. In the nine-county metro area, prices rose 11.1% year-over-year to $340,000. The national increase was 6% in December to $404,400, which means Chicago area home prices rose 5% more than the rest of the nation. The S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20 City Index released earlier this week shows only New York had stronger home price growth than Chicago. The largest health system in Chicago is pulling out of its 47 Illinois clinics at Walgreens stores. The move will happen early next month. Advocate Healthcare says it'll find other roles for clinic employees within its system. According to Cranes, the clinics are staffed by one or two medical office assistants plus clinicians. Walgreens says customers will still be able to access the same services after Advocate pulls out, but the drugstore chain is having financial problems and is in the process of closing hundreds of pharmacies across the country. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And now Steve Alexander with the business of food.
Yeah, thank you. And the last couple of days, we've been talking about egg prices again. And while the idea of forking over $7 for a dozen of eggs may make you cluck, imagine if you were buying a couple of million eggs a week. I'll tell you who does that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Rebecca Lupesco is on the phone. She is
the marketing director for Duke's.
Duke's mayonnaise, not that well known around here, has been a staple in the South for a century, and
we use a lot of eggs.
A lot is an understatement. Around 2 million eggs a week. I'm sure they don't pay $8 a dozen, though. The backstory of Duke's is pretty cool. During World War I, Eugenia Duke started making sandwiches for soldiers who were training near Greenville, South Carolina. And after they shipped out, she started getting letters.
They were like, you know, that sandwich was good, but it's really the mayonnaise that made it special. Like, can you bottle it up and send it to us?
And she did.
And the rest is history.
But you may know Duke's because of college football. The Duke's Mayo Bowl is played each year in Charlotte, and the winning coach, instead of getting showered in Gatorade, gets 5 gallons of mayonnaise dumped on his head.
It is all real mayonnaise.
Yeah, that's got to be one of those good news, bad news things for the coaches. Yay, we're going to a bowl game. Uh-oh. And she says the first year they did the dump, it didn't go well.
We bumped Coach Beamer in the head with the cooler.
So they made sure they had some sturdier people do the dumping. And this year, when Minnesota beat Virginia Tech, Gophers head coach P.J. Fleck was all in.
He had a hat on. He ripped it off. And he really looks like he was enjoying the mayo bath.
All of this to sell mayonnaise.
It's a great event, and it's a great activation for the brand.
And mayo is the ultimate farm product. She says Duke's is made of egg yolks, soybean oil, and vinegar, and if you'd rather eat it than dump it over your head, it recently went on sale nationwide, including at Chicago area Jewel's and Mariano's. Also, from the farm to your belly, it's National Corn Chip Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Terry Savage, what did you take away from our guest?
Don't parlay your stock market gains beyond the amount you can afford to lose. Just taking off that last commercial, I mean, sure. That was all about sports. Look, I've known Jim Stack forever. If you want to read more, go to investtech.com, investech.com. He and I have had a significant amount in cash. He for his investment management clients over the last year, out of concern about some of these issues. So yeah, that's money that was in T-bills at 4.5% and didn't earn 12 or 20% in the stock market.
Yeah.
But when you reach a certain stage in life, you kind of want to be, you value sleeping at night over how much more money can you spend or leave to your children.
Can I share with you a number that jumped out at me? So he said, if you're in your 20s and 30s and you're dollar cost averaging, hooray, maybe even your 40s. He said, you'll be able to weather the coming storm, perhaps. But he said that if you are at or near retirement, that you should not be 70% in the market. He said 70%. And I thought, well, duh. So I wasn't as alarmed by that because I don't think that's new information. He didn't say you should be under 50%. He didn't give us an exact number there, but he was just saying be more cautious with your money because you might lose some of it in the market. But 70% struck me as a high number.
Well, so as a matter of fact, you can see his managed accounts and his percentage in equities and very conservative ones at that is down around the low 50% and has been for a little bit now.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you get into one of those bear markets, Jim and I got in at the same time, 73, 74, that was over a 50% decline. And the same thing in 87, the same thing at the dot-com bubble bursting, and in 2008, those were all nearly or beyond 50% declines. If you have 70%, even if you have half your money invested in the stock market, and half of that disappears, because that's what happens in a bear market. You look, and your account value was $119,000, and you think, I'm so glad I did that. And all of a sudden, it's only $60,000, the money just disappears. It's okay if you're young. You've heard me say this a million times. America will survive and prosper. But if you are in your retirement years, It changes your whole life if half of what you have invested disappears.
Yeah.
Because you know what happens then? Then you panic and you say, oh, I can't afford. What if it goes down even more? And you sell. And that half that's gone is gone forever because you can't take the risk of losing maybe 60%. I'm not saying that'll happen. I'm saying here's the human nature of it. The whole world is screaming bulls right now. Everything that we've talked about, nothing can break the bull market. AI is going to continue. We're going to beat them. The Fed's going to be fine. Inflation's going to be fine. I don't know. Nobody has that crystal ball. But how much do you want to have on the table when you've got a finite amount of time,
right,
a finite amount of money, and you hope to make them work together to last as long as you do? You do not want to see 20, 25%, or God forbid 50% disappear.
Terry Savage, next week we'll answer more of your specific questions, but we wanted to give some time to that word of caution, ease Terry's conscience, and make us all have a better appreciation of both sides of the coin. Very good, Terry. Thank you.
Thanks, John.